Okay, so this week's parasha, obviously the famous story of Avram and Sodom. We have a concept talking about Sodom called Midas Sodom. Midas Sodom means the characteristics of Sodom, applicable today to Jewish people. What that means is sometimes the rabbis and a halacha court case will force something upon someone. They feel you have to act justifiably. And in order to do that, they will come down and they will coerce people to do things. But the phrase in the Talmud in many places is, we do not coerce for me this adon. So let's give you a classic example. An easy one would be like this. If I walk into someone else's field and I decide I want to cut down his fruits and take it, they will stop me. Why? Because that's just outright theft. And if anyone could stop me, they should stop me. If I want to go into someone's property and instead of taking something for myself, stealing an apple for myself, what I'm just going to do is I'm not out for myself. No, I'm out for him. I'm just going to chop down one of his trees for some crazy reason. If I decide to chop down one of his trees, the rabbis will stop me. I'm violating someone else's rights. No right to do that. But let's say I decide, depending on the exact situation, we're going to be the easiest situation, is I'm going to remain outside of his property. I'm not going to stand on the grass, not going to do anything. But what I am going to do is I'm going to benefit because the tree is going to overhang on a hot day. And I'm going to sit there and benefit from his tree by basking in the shade. In that case, even though potentially in strict law, I have no right to be benefiting from his thing. He didn't give me permission to do this. Again, there's details to work out. The rabbis will come over to him and say, listen, we don't force people to be careful in these type of things because you gain nothing. You lose nothing. And he gains ain't kai from his time. For you to tell the guy to walk away from the free shade when it doesn't do anything to you, you're just a bad person. When it comes to someone being a bad person, the rabbis will tell the other people, we're not going to bother the instigator was going sitting under the tree. We're not going to bother that guy. Ain't kaifan al mitzvah sedayim. That was a classic example. And again, learn from this week's parasha the concept of sedayim. So we're going to tie it now with something else. One of the 613 commandments is that leisaynu ish amitai. It's in Bayikra. I'll send Charles the locations afterward. Leisaynu means one is not permitted to cause stress, distress another human being. Simple interpretation of the pasuk is it's going on words. Of course, it includes more. That might be other problems. If I punch someone, I also violate his rights, but I also made him distressed. But I will violate this as well. But in the easiest, simplest case would be making fun of someone, hurtful words, cursing someone, not cursing as the curse, but cursing means being derogatory to someone else. If A is derogatory to B, he violates a biblical commandment, cause if B cares, A is not to cause stress for B. The Sefer HaChanach, anonymously written in the 1300s. Yes.
What about telling somebody about your unsuccessful operation?
But sometimes it causes glee. But yes, I love the fact that you think it would not. And that's now, if there's going to be a purpose for it, then there could be something else as well. So it depends. You have to start weighing.
Well, you're not using the same doctor, are you?
No, thank God. Thank God. Right. So sometimes it could be like a lookout. By the way, X happened to me. Be extra careful. Look out for those telltale signs. But otherwise, it's a good point. Good point. So in general, when A causes stress to B, violates a 613 commandment. We do not give lashes. The courts do not come and give lashes for such a violation. Why? Simple reason. The Sefer HaChinuch says this himself. We only give lashes. We discussed it 1,000 times. The courts only punish for a physical violation, physical transgression. When A is talking to B and stressed and distressing him, that's not actually of physical violation. Words in 99% of the cases, there are a couple of exceptions. 99% of the cases are not called physical. Since it's not called physical, there is no lashes for this. The Sefer HaChinuch writes, by the way, Sefer HaChinuch writes, again, 1300s anonymously, he writes that I cannot write all the examples because it's endless. I'm not going to give you the example. By the way, if someone does, he says X. It's not only he says X, he says X, he says Y, he says Z. Anyone saying something that causes stress to someone else, it violates this thing. And then we're going to discuss now a more important thing that the Sefer HaChinuch says as well. He says when A is distressing B, A clearly violated one of the 613 commandments, no question about it. He said, what about B? What is B's response supposed to be? So A, he says amazingly, Sefer HaChinuch 1300, that you cannot, you meaning God cannot, we cannot expect someone who is being taunted to be a stone, that's his word, an evan, a stone, heartless, thoughtless, and therefore be able to take it. We do not expect that. We are human beings. And therefore, when A is taunting B, B in legal law is allowed to respond. And when he is taunting him back, that is not a violation of the law. The Chafetz Chaim adds on, by the way, not only not violating the law of don't taunt, you're not violating the law of revenge. No, sometimes revenge just plays in the role. But if A is taunting B, And B, responds. There is no, B is permitted in law to respond. B is allowed to respond. Why? Because the Torah is not given to angels, given to human beings. We don't expect someone who's being attacked. We're going to get to all these type of words soon. Someone who's being attacked to sit back and not respond. That would be crazy. So of course, B is allowed to respond. And he says, the Chavos Chaim, we're talking about words only so far. B is allowed to respond. Not only is he not violating taunting, he's not violating the Nekama revenge as well. That's a step one. A violation of one is not reciprocated because a person's not a stone. Happens to be.
That's in what ways can you respond?
Oh, that's, we're going to get to, first we're going to give a second approach, and then we'll get to those things. Excellent. Just keep me focused. That's what we got to discuss. Now, as a second thing to know, because before we get to how you respond, will depend on the reasons. So easily right now, the Sefer HaChinuch is saying, B is not expected to be a stone. The Rasag, that's an earlier even the Sefer HaChinuch, he says the same law, different reason. He said when A is taunting B, B is allowed to respond. B has a technical reason why B is allowed to respond. He said the verse says, the pasuk, the command that says, do not distress another yid, says a man cannot, should not, as an instruction, as a prohibition, A cannot stress his fellow man. So this other early commentator says, why does it add the extra word, his fellow man? A should not distress another. Why is fellow? So he says what it means is that it only applies to two people that are considered fellows, which in general, that word re'eyu in the Torah means someone who is keeping the 613 commandments or trying to. So he says, unbelievable idea, when A taunts B, A takes away his own status of being a righteous Jewish person because he's no longer a good person. He's openly violating one of the 613 commandments on purpose. So therefore, B's permissibility to respond is because there's no violation in that case, because the violation was only written that you can't taunt A, what we will call a good person. Since A made himself into a not good person when he began the taunting, B's response is permitted because he's not taunting a good person. Not because he doesn't have to be a stone. No, it doesn't make a difference. Imagine A was a bad person to start with, and B was a bad person to solve. It doesn't make a difference. And A taunted B, A would be legal in his rights to taunt B as far as this law goes. Because this law added a word. Not every law is based on every Jew. Some laws are don't do it at all, Jews or non-Jews. Some are don't do to a Jew, but you can do to a non-Jew. And some are not, you cannot do to a Jew, observing Jew, a good Jew. We're not going into what that means, but you cannot do it to a bad Jew. So he says, since it adds in a word, re'eyu, adds in a word, your fellow man, that extra addition means it only is applicable to a good person, and a non-good person is not applicable to. And therefore, the responder is allowed to respond because it doesn't apply at all. It doesn't apply at all. So we have two reasons why a man could respond. We're not showing the levels yet. Either he could respond because you can't be a stone, or he could respond because the first guy's not a good guy anymore. Practical difference between these two will be a couple of cases. Easy case number one is, let's assume we have a rabbi and he gives a share on Tuesday nights and everyone respects him, and he starts taunting someone and making fun of someone. Is there allowed to be a response? If you believe that a person can't be a stone, he can't be a stone. No one can be taunted and not respond. It doesn't matter who's taunting him. A human being offended is going to respond and is permitted to respond. Doesn't make a difference. Therefore, whether it's a regular human being taunting you or a grand rabbi taunting you, you're allowed to respond. But if the reason is, the second reason we gave, that the reason is because when A taunts B, A loses the title of being what we call a good person. So when a grand rabbi is taunting, we can assume he's doing it under the correct guidelines. Maybe he's doing it to improve a student. Maybe he's doing it for a reason. Maybe a parent is doing it for a good reason. In that case, he doesn't lose the title of being a good person. So the person would not, the student in this case, would not be allowed to respond. Because the reason you're only allowed to respond is because A loses his title. A rabbi doesn't lose his title because we could assume he's doing it for a good reason. So even though it seems like a theoretical difference, why is the person normally allowed to respond? Why is the taunted allowed to respond to the taunt? Either a stone or because A loses his title. Practical difference one is if a rabbi does it. Practical difference number two, it's going to reverse actually in this case, is let's say A is taunting B, does a third party get involved? Can he respond and stand up to the bully and say, okay, you call him A, I'm going to call you X? If you believe that the person, first answer we gave, is allowed to respond. Why? Because a person can't be a stone. That's only the victim taking it, maybe. I don't know if a third party can't be a stone. You have to know exactly the circumstance. It's possible he would not be allowed a third party to respond. But if you hold, like the other one, that the reason B could respond is because A loses his title as a good person, If he's no longer a good person, anyone could be taunting him. Doesn't make a difference. He's out. He lost his title. And this biblical commandment is only applicable to a good person. Now goes the third potential reason, which I want to discuss tonight, which will add into what Stephen said a minute ago. What about if the victim, what I just told you is the taunter is a rabbi, or a regular person, and there's the third party being getting involved. What about if the taunted is justified? He's the rabbi. If you want to say, let's go the easy one. If you want to say A loses the title, then when A attacks a rabbi, certainly the rabbi could respond because A is not a legitimate person anymore. He's not only attacking a regular person, he's attacking a rabbi. But what about this idea? The reason why B is allowed to respond is that we don't expect someone to be a stone. We don't expect someone to be above a human being. What about if this person is a grand rabbi? Can we expect more of him, and therefore he should not be allowed to respond? That's the first question we're asking. I want to tell you an unbelievable story. Now, Charles, when I put on something on my screen, you will still see me on camera, correct? We're assuming. Okay, because I'm going to read what I wrote here. I found that I want to write down the words. There was a story going on in the time of the Rambam. The Rambam lived a long time ago, and he received letters. He was somewhat famous. He received a letter from Baghdad, And the letter from Baghdad, here, several letters. One of the letters from Baghdad was by this rabbi. The rabbi said, you should know, just like we knew now in history, that the Rambam in his time, when he was alive, was being ridiculed by many people. Some of his books were being burned. It wasn't such good times for him. So what happened was this rabbi from Baghdad wrote him a letter. He said, I want to tell you something, Rabbi Rambam. In my area in Baghdad, there are many people who are saying disparaging comments about you. You should know I'm aggressive. I'm a rabbi, and I realize you're really great. I'm defending you. I'm going after them. I'm taking up the honor of Torah and an entire letter. And this is what he writes to the Rambam. I'm going to read to you what the Rambam responds. The Rambam responds to this. What has been reported to us, speaks in humility, us, it's really to me. What is reported to us, that there is someone in Baghdad speaking ill of us, again, humble, and trying to lift his stature by diminishing mine. It means he's not going to be down because he's building himself up. It might be true, might not be true. I mean, you sent me a letter. You sent me a letter from Baghdad. And you're claiming someone's doing it to you. I'm not going to believe such a thing right away. It's a letter. Maybe you're right. Maybe you're wrong. I don't accept lashon hara against such a person. As well, we have heard that you are protesting their attitude in my honor. You're defending me. And I might add, he's the Rambam saying, thank you. I heard you've been successful. Then he tells him like this. Do not proceed in this way. Do not continue what you're doing. Why? Because first of all, know one thing. We forgive all who act this way based on foolishness. It doesn't make a difference. I forgive the guy. He's not doing anything that now is considered legitimately wrong because I already forgive the guy. Certainly is what we've discussed. If there's a purpose to what he is doing that has no substantial effect on us, me. Why? The halacha is we force people not to behave like the people of Sidon, which means when one is benefiting and the other loses nothing, we pressure the person to give in. So he says like this, the Rambam. The Rambam's saying a fascinating thing. When this guy is speaking against me, he lives where? He lives in Baghdad. Does that affect me where I'm living in Egypt and Cairo? I have no effect in Egypt from this guy saying bad things about me. I lose nothing. It does not affect my parnasa. My reputation is irrelevant. I have a job. Nothing is being affected by me. Oh, so now what the problem is? He's doing something wrong. He feels good about it. He's doing the old work, building himself up by knocking someone down. Oh, he wants to gain and I don't lose. It's similar to sitting under the shade of a guy's tree. We don't force people to start acting in a different way when it comes to the situation. We tell the owner of the tree, let the guy benefit from your shade. What are you being a jerk for? We tell the guy underneath the tree, don't move. We're fine with that. Why? Because you gain the shade. He doesn't lose. His tree is not affected by the shade being given off. So the same idea applies here. The Rambam says, you should know. Now, I don't know if there's a Rambam ruling. I'm saying ruling, but it's a letter he wrote to the person. It's not written in his law book. It's in a letter. He said, listen, if A is making fun of B, he says on himself, then B should think a little bit and say, wait a second, am I actually being affected? Okay, that will depend on the situation. If I'm not being affected, I lose nothing. Most cases, I lose nothing. He gains, feels good about himself. Then don't bother. Don't get involved. So that's what he sees. So that's a third approach. The Sefer HaChinuch until now said the guy can't be a stone, respond. The other Sefer said that the taunter loses his title as a good person. Therefore, in both of them say, taunty, respond. The Rambam saying, no, there's a separate rule coming over here. What do you mean respond? We have an halacha that says we don't force people on tzedakah concepts. Therefore, since the guy is the victim, is losing nothing, and the taunter is gaining emotionally feels good about himself. Oh, that guy's a bum. I feel better about myself. Then what are you doing? Don't respond at all. That's the Rambam say. So it's possible to say, there's my to answer my question. I don't know. What do we say? We said the difference is going to be.
Rabbi, question for you.
Yes.
What about the listener saying, I can't be a stone?
Third party.
Third party says, I hear somebody saying these things about the Rambam, about you. I know that they are wrong. He's spiritual. I can't just sit here. I'm not a stone.
Excellent. So we said before the Rambam's ruling, we said one of the practical differences between the Sefer HaChinuch, which says don't be a stone, and the other one that says that the guy loses his title, we said one of those differences is going to be whether a third party can get involved. If we said before, we weren't sure, we said like this, if it's about losing your title, when A makes fun of B, A no longer becomes a righteous person, therefore this law is not applicable to him. So everyone's allowed to taunt him because he's no longer a religious Jew. Again, I don't know if it's a religious, a nice Jew. Therefore, everyone agrees the third party can get involved. We said before, we weren't really sure. It seems like most people say that according to the Chinuch, that not being a stone is limited to the victim. So now, if it's limited to the victim, it's not so clear a third person can get involved. But you're asking a third thing. Maybe I'll ain't cutting me the stone. You should tell the guy to get involved or not get involved. Tell the third guy you can't listen why. You're being affected negatively by the tree giving shade off. Is that what you're saying?
The person who hears somebody saying bad things about the Rambam,
yes,
who knows the Rambam's greatness.
And he knows the Rambam forgives him and doesn't care.
Yes, he knows that, but he can't hear, you could imagine someone saying terrible things about this great Jewish leader. Yeah. How can you sit there and let him spew this stuff?
Excellent. So you're right. So it could be what we said before. It could be a third party sometimes cannot be expected to be a stone as well. In many cases, they're going to say is expected to be a stone. You're a third party. And you're saying now, I agree. In certain situations, a third party cannot be expected to be a stone. He should be allowed to respond. Excellent. Now,
I mean, you could imagine somebody,
making fun of someone's father.
Follower of a Rebbe, and somebody says horrible things about the Rebbe.
Right.
Can he?
And there might even be a second reason to stand up, because it could be not his own honor. He's honoring the honor of Torah. But yes, 100% would be a good reason. Now, excellent. We have to think it through. I like it. Now, the Chofetz Chaim you asked before, Stephen, you asked before. The Chofetz Chaim discusses when we say, when we say that the person's allowed to respond, the question is how much time is given. The Chofetz Chaim writes that the only time we tell a guy, don't be a stone, according to that approach, don't be a stone, you're allowed to respond, is during the action that's happening. While A is taunting B, we don't expect B to be above it all. But as soon as A leaves the building, B can't, chase down the guy and say, the jerk store is waiting for you. Something, the jerk store ran out of you. That doesn't, you can't wait 3 months and then respond to something. It's not the way it works. Because the object of being, cannot being a stone, is only in the heat of the moment. And that, by the way, I don't know if you would agree in a rabbi's case. If A is making fun of B's rabbi and B's getting very upset, not directed at B, but it's B's rabbi, even that would be directed at B a little bit if it's his follower, but how long is he allowed to say, I'm going to get this guy back? Is it only during the taunting of being a stone? So that's what the Chofetz Chaim says. The Chofetz Chaim says the limitation, the leniency of being permitted to respond is only at the time of the taunting.
What about in writing? What about a book? What about something in writing?
Excellent, excellent. We got to three, excellent. Wow, 3 for 3 tonight. Second thing is, that's the Chofetz Chaim. Chofetz Chaim simply says, and he adds on from the famous Musaf, something I think we discussed years ago, that before a person goes to bed every night, he's supposed to sit down and say, I forgive everyone for what they did to me. Like we have that Tevilah Zak on Erev Kippur. Some people do it every single night. So he says, by the time you're getting there, but during the fight is allowed, more than that, not allowed. The Chavez Yor, he says what I just said. You have until that nighttime. You're allowed to be angry the whole day. But when it comes to the nighttime, an average person gets into bed and he says, that's it. By the time you get to bed, it's over. The Meiri, that's a region. The Meiri seems to say from the way he writes these laws, unlimited. The offense is unlimited. Now the Chavis Yor, who I said says till the nighttime, adds on what you were saying, I think, Stephen. Because he says that what I'm telling you, only till the nighttime, is when someone taunted you, someone made fun of you. You're ugly, you're fat, you're this, you're that. That time, by the nighttime, calm off. But he says, if someone physically attacked you, he says, that can't be. What do you mean? Why should it go away at nighttime? So he answers, on a physical attack, we're going to give an example of God, but a burn on someone's hand. as and he says he hasn't used the word burn, but the way he's talking, as long as the physical effects are the ramifications are still relevant, you're allowed to respond. Because it didn't go away. It's continuous in the moment. Which would mean, I think, if someone's writing something about you and it's there for everyone to read, then it didn't go away. That's always called a moment. So we have three answers of what that is. Either the moment, which now we could define what the moment actually means. If I'm making fun of you face to face, it might only be these 5 seconds. But if I'm making fun of you in writing for the world to see on the internet, it might be much longer. We have the Me'iri saying, it looks like you could plot revenge forever. And we have the Chavis Yair saying, no, till nighttime alone. So again, we have three potential ways to respond. You either cannot respond because you can't be a stone, either can respond because the first person loses his title of being a normal Jew, or you shouldn't respond because the Rambam says you lose nothing. Again, very unique case. I don't lose anything, big deal. Then we have a thing, how long can you respond for? Right away, only right away, till the nighttime, maybe until forever, or maybe until the damage is still being inflicted. On a physical damage, could be an emotional damage as well. Now we have a phrase that's being popular today. What about disproportionate retaliation? This is what I find mind-blowing. It says like this. One of the early commentators said that all of these laws apply only for literally an eye for an eye. I make fun of someone that they're fat, makes fun of someone that they're fat, or equal. But if you're going to go above and beyond, these rules are off the game. And he says, well, how can I prove such a thing? That's a very wild thing. The concept of disproportionate retaliation. He says, how do you know such a thing? So it's amazing. In last week's parsha, and again, I'll send Charles the psukim, it says, unbelievable story. Hagar became pregnant. And Hagar was diminishing Sarah's greatness. Rashi says, she said, look, I became pregnant right away, not her. Whatever it was, she was diminishing. And Sarah responded, she retaliated with some negative stuff. And the Torah says, Vayaneha, caused her suffering. Just for the record, by the way, what the suffering is, the Torah doesn't say. There's an argument among many, many, many commentators. One Medrash says that the great suffering she did to her maidservant was that she told her, when I'm going to the bathroom, I want you to follow me and carry a towel. So before we look at the unbelievable thing of what Sarah meant, now, there are other interpretations that are more extreme. But I'm saying that even one interpretation is that when he said she caused the suffering, the minutiae of the detail was carrying a thing. But and I have to say again that the Muslim forum bring down that you can't look at the phrase and simply understand it, that Sari Menu, one of our great tzaddikas, was retaliatory, was a baby, was offended. All these, you have to look at it as a greater story. But the Ramban says a very controversial thing. The Ramban writes there that because Sara responded negatively and was very aggressive against Hagar, because of that response, forever and ever, she sinned. Unbelievable, use such a phrase, Ramban says it. She sinned, and because of that, the children of Hagar, wink, wink, the Arabs, will forever hold a grudge against the Jewish people. Only because Sarah retaliated, and she sinned by retaliation. So everyone asked the Ramban, what? You're going to say Sarah sinned? And how did Sarah sin? What was that sin she did? So one of these commentators I just said, one of the early ones says, I'll tell you how she sinned. Very simple. Because the fact is that Sarah did not respond in reciprocatory fashion. That means Hagar diminished Sarah in her eyes, whatever that means exactly. And Sarah's response was overboard. Since it was overboard, that's according to Ramban, again on her level, that was called the sin that creates that from here on forth, the Arabs are always going to have a thorn in our side. Which means, according to the way this understanding of the Ramban, it's one understanding, that means there's something emotionally that you can't, that's something called a proportional response. Now again, last week, if we look at the video, I said it's clear that some of the commentators believe, and it's open law, someone's coming to kill you, you kill them first. Physically attacking is not the same thing. Someone's going to kill you, your obligation is to defend yourself and kill them first. We're talking now right now about emotion. So they're making fun of me. The response is allowed, 100% allowed. How much time is a debate? Only that time, only for those few seconds, maybe till the nighttime, maybe while it's still affecting me, maybe forever. How much you can respond? There's one rabbi who says you cannot go overboard, and he brings a proof from Sarah. The problem we're going to have. Wait, what do you mean a proof from Sarah? Who said? Let's assume that the Ramban is correct, that what Sarah did was wrong, and you're going to say that what did she do wrong? She went overboard. But I can give you other things she might have done wrong. You know what? Maybe the Ramban rules, like Chavetz Chaim, that when are you allowed to respond? Only for those 10 seconds. While someone is taunting you, you're allowed to respond, but you can't respond an hour later. It's too late. Or you can't respond the next day. Definitely too late according to Moore. Or you can't respond if it doesn't affect you at all. So maybe the reason why Sarah sinned is not because she went overboard. Maybe Sarah responded. Maybe you're allowed to go overboard. 100%. We believe in disproportionate response. That's allowed. What was not allowed is disproportionate response after a certain time period. You can respond as much as you want legally. Go overboard in a response. You can't go overboard a year later. That's the problem. The timing becomes the issue, not the level. Not the level of the response, the timing of how long you did it. So we have no real proof, according to me and others, there's no real proof that Sarah proves you can't go overboard. We only know one thing. The Torah says that Sarah responded and she caused Hagar to suffer. We have a Ramban that says that was a great sin. Some want to say that the great sin is because she went overboard. She retaliated without proportional response, and that would be a sin. The way we'll set up everything tonight, that would not be the only potential interpretation. If you go with the Ramban that she sinned, it might not be the only interpretation. She might have sinned after the permitted time slot, and therefore she's considered sinning because of that. And again, we're saying, by the way, it might not even be that she retaliated so badly, because according to one of the Midrashim, her great torture that she did for them was make her carry a towel. So let's relax a little bit. Now, so we're going to end with this because it's getting late, and hopefully next week we'll go back in person. Is that I saw an unbelievable idea. That the reason, which is good for everything we learn now, the reason why Sarah responded and caused Hagar to suffer, but really what she was doing was creating dominion, if that's the word, domination over Hagar. The reason why she did it was because Sarah saw futuristically that the children of Hagar, hence the Arabs, were going to be a little bit over-aggressive toward us, and therefore on purpose, because we believe in this phrase called Mais Avosim Labanim, whatever the original forefathers and foremothers did, it worked on into our DNA, our genetic DNA, as well for theirs, as well as the Hagar and those people that Esav worked into the DNA. So the reason why she purposely subjugated her, that's the word, is subjugated her to her authority was not an ego ride by Sarah that she felt slighted by Hagar's innuendo. No, Sarah brought her in originally. She knew what the whole plan was supposed to be. She had no problem with that. But she realized right away, If the Arab nations, if Hagar gains too much confidence and too much stuff, it won't be good. I'm going to rule over her to remind her that in the end of time, that's what I saw the Torah. If you want to look up in the Chumash, the Torah, the Torah says it. I think it's 16:6. I think it's around there in chapter Tezayin, 16 something. The Torah, the Torah, I think it's in the English, in the Sepharia. She wrote, the reason why I'm going to do it, I'm going to subjugate them, is because in the end of time, the Jews and Sarah's children are going to have domination over Hagar's children, and hopefully that will be in time for before next Tuesday to be back in person. Thank you.